There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Yammer Yager, episode 68, season 3 of the Daily Intermission podcast. What up, everybody? It's Greg in studio. It's Justin in Thunder Bay. It's been a crazy week over here in Nova Scotia. How are you making out, my man? How you been doing?
Unreal. I feel like I keep repeating it, but it hasn't ended. The weather is absolutely amazing. I golfed twice in the last 3 days. Shot a 89 yesterday.
Okay.
Which for me is okay. Yep. I usually like to be under 85, but it was my first time playing this one in, I've played it twice in the last 2 years. So including last round. So a little bit unfamiliar. Got to get a feel for it, but had two birdies, which
for my game
isn't necessarily the norm. I don't know. Yep. The last time I had two birdies in a round. So that was pretty good. And the weather was unbelievable. I guess interesting thing here, just might be interesting to some of the viewers. Obviously, I'm in Thunder Bay, Ontario. I was just texting about it in the chat with you and the Archman. And I teed off last night after work at 6 p.m. Or we got off, I guess, a little early at 5:40 p.m. But we don't have sunset until like 10 p.m. And then in July and August, it's 10:50 p.m., 10:45 p.m. We tee off for 18 holes as late as like 8 p.m. if you have an open course. But like usually, yeah, 5:45 p.m. to like 6:50 p.m. We let that thing go. And it's nice to be able to have 18 holes in the daylight after work. So
that'd be so dangerous for me because it's well known around my golf course, around my buddies. I have a few beverages when I'm playing. I get a little loose. I have a couple. If I teed off at 8 o'clock in the evening, I mean, I'd be taxiing home every round.
Monday, Wednesday nights, you're just, you can't help.
Yeah, no, it wouldn't be that far. It'd be the Fridays and Saturdays. Yeah, I don't have any issues as far as, anyway, we're not going to dive down that rabbit hole, but I did want to give a serious note, obviously thinking about everyone in Nova Scotia that's dealing with the wildfires in Halifax. I know that there was a golf studio there that I've done a little bit of work with Justin in the past called Hole 9, and they lost their entire 2-bay TrackMan setup, all burned to the ground, their house. So obviously thinking about everybody in Halifax and just even around Nova Scotia and even out west in Western Canada, you know, it's been a really dry spring and even winter. And you know, you got to be very careful with, you know, how you're burning. And a gentleman, his fire got out of control, and now the entire province is feeling the effects, which is unfortunate, but thinking about everybody in Nova Scotia, and hopefully we can get out of this stronger. And they're banning fires for the month of June. It's a shit show out east here.
Yeah, and even quickly, if I may add, the firefighters, because I got firefighter buddies and connections here that the whole country, that the firefighters in Canada in the summers and even in the US and all these places, but firefighters right now in Canada, man, they are all banding together. A lot of them are traveling long distances, leaving their families to go help out with this. So big shout out to them.
Absolutely.
Everyone's putting in the work for the firefighters for sure.
Oh my gosh. What a job they do. Absolutely. We're thinking about everyone and hopefully stay safe. The firefighters, I mean, what a gig that is. A lot of them being volunteers. Well, a lot of them being volunteers. Well, I did want to give another shout out, Justin. So on the weekend, my golf course hosts, so in Nova Scotia, all the top amateurs, there's kind of obviously the provincial championships, the big one. It's a 4-day event, but there's a few kind of 2-day events around the province that really mean a lot. And this one, they kind of, it's recognized as the first major of the season for amateur golfers. It's at my golf course. It's a long driveway, very treed, like kind of Magnolia Lane-ish. And I mean, there's no resemblance to Augusta at all, but it feels like the Augusta of Nova Scotia. It's a really nice track. Anyway, so I caddied for Jason Thibodeau, a good friend of the show. and it was windy. The track was windy. It's a par 70 golf course. He shot 72 first day. We went out and shot 72 the second day. Ended up winning by one. Plus four, won the event. So shout out to good buddy Jason Thibodeau of the show. Great work. It was fun to be on the bag. First win on the bag. So I'm happy about it. I'm happy about it.
Come on now. You got to tell. Okay, tell us now, though. Is this a Michael Block performance for you two, or is this a Tiger shot? Like, you guys going on a run this summer? How do you guys must be feeling unreal? But come on now, what's the summer looking like?
It's a good question. I think my services are done in regard to caddying this summer. I'll play in my club championship most likely later on in the summer. But yeah, I won't be for hire. I mean, it was just kind of that one time. I can spare the time, but no, it was good fun, man. It's fun caddying too. Like it's nerve wracking because golf's a very nerve wracking sport, especially tournament golf. And it was nice to not have the nerves on me. And obviously, he's an incredible player. Short game, his wedge game was insane. But no, shout out to Jason and big road trip coming up, Justin. I wanted to finish that off in the pregame show, man. I am about to go on a journey that I have never taken on before, and I'm really looking forward to it.
No, and for sure, it sounds like it's gonna be a lot of fun. Sounds like you cashed your paycheck from the win, and you're hitting the road now. Which, hey, why not, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, it's gonna be exciting. So I'm going to see some family members down in southern Maine. Just about, it's a beautiful beach area, a very touristy area called Old Orchard Beach, and a nice Don Ross golf course will be able to play. So I haven't seen them in about 5 years. Kind of the COVID gap. I actually went every summer. Until I was like 22 to this beach in this area. A lot of my family down there, so I'm going to go see them and then drive up north to Quebec and then Montreal and then Toronto. So it's going to be an absolute heater of a road trip. I'll try to keep you guys posted on the Instagram stories. Maybe I'll check in every once in a while. But but it's going to be good fun, man. And we're going to be posting lots of content and we're just going to be keep grinding away, man. So are you ready to get into things? It's been a wonderful week in sports as well. Winding down, it's sad because... You know, obviously the content's coming to an end in the NBA and NHL, and it's been a wonderful playoffs, but, we've got both finals set, and we've got a lot to get into in the NHL and NBA quarter one and quarter two here.
Absolutely. Let's get into some NHL action. Come on.
Just before we do in quarter one, folks, we got to give a shout out to Canada winning the gold medal overseas at the World Championship. We talked about it last episode. It's not a huge event. It's not, it's not massive for North American countries. I mean, obviously the United States and Canada, they ice what they can in terms of who will commit to go over there after the long NHL season. But Latvia, dude. Latvia wins the bronze medal. This is a team that's fighting for relegation. So listen to this stat, Justin, that I read. Latvia has 4,000 minor hockey players in their country. The GTA in Toronto, 50,000.
Yeah.
Think about that. Just in Toronto, there's 50,000 kids playing minor hockey in Latvia, the entire country, 4,000. Latvia wins bronze. The country goes wild. They made the Monday a holiday after they won on Sunday. Pretty cool, man. Pretty cool for that. No. Pretty cool for that country.
It's the biggest deal ever. So I have a teammate of mine who's Latvian. He's from Latvia.
Come on.
He's come to the U.S. to play. So he was at a lot of their games, start to finish from the tournament, and he was going absolutely berserk, like as the whole country was. This was the real deal. And just like Finland, we saw Finland win it last year, and I'm not sure I think it was in Finland as well. Man, that country and the fans, this is a huge tournament for Europe, and they show out for it. This is the real deal. It's the world championship. I think the disconnect, obviously, for the Canada US is just we know we don't send our absolute best, where a lot of these guys have played together, despite obviously not having a couple NHLers. These are professional players within their home countries at the top leagues that have played together for a long time and have a lot of chemistry and different things that these Canadian American teams don't. Regardless, Latvia bronze is absolutely crazy. Amazing. Yeah. It's insane.
Monumental for hockey in that country.
100%. And probably one of the most, the least talked about thing is going to be Germany getting silver. Cause obviously it wasn't a home country story.
Yeah.
And obviously Latvia is a bigger, underdog per se than Germany was, but this Germany is sneaky making their mark on hockey here with Dreisaitl, Stutzel, silver medal at the world championship.
That JJ Paterka kid.
Yeah.
Was awesome, man. He's Buffalo, is he not?
Yeah. Yes, he is.
Yes, and then Mo Sider's German, if I'm not mistaken, as well. I mean,
Moritz Sider's German.
Yeah, like, I mean.
No, they got pieces, man. They've for got, real. Like,
yeah, they're starting to engineer German engineering. German engineering.
Absolutely, absolutely.
We've got some hockey players around the corner for sure coming out of Germany.
100%. Yeah. 100%. Yeah, it was awesome to see Canada pull it off. Obviously, like, that's the standard for us. It's really exactly. They're robust, right?
100%. That's where they're at. The fifth in the last eight seasons for Canada. But you said you hit the head nail right on the head. If they don't win gold, we're kind of like, what a joke.
100%. In every international hockey event, yep. That's what it is. It's yep. gold or bust. But they got it done. And obviously, I'm able to say to my Latvian teammate here, we beat them with our seventh squad. So yeah. that might
have been like our W team. Yeah,
literally.
Wasn't, but, yeah, anyway.
Regardless, obviously, congrats to the Canadians. Congrats to Germany, Latvia. Still entertaining hockey regardless. So definitely. Nice to tune into those this weekend.
Definitely. It was nice for Adam Fantilli, hey, to get a little, get in the mix there. He won a gold medal at the World Juniors, now gold medal at the World Championships. Now he's poised to go. Number two, I think Leo Carlson is actually, he lit it up for Sweden as well. So those two guys, yeah. I don't think you can miss if you're Columbus or Anaheim. Like, both of those guys look really good.
Agreed. I don't think there's much room to move for Fantilli. Obviously, he's not going to pass Bedard, but regardless, he locked himself into top three. But more than that, I think he just, it's another step in mental and physical preparation to being able to step in right away and make an impact. So we talk about Bedard a ton, but I think this top three, like, we're looking at,
very like good players.
McDavid, Eichel, et cetera, like big impacts outside just the number one pick. So that's exciting, obviously, for this draft coming up.
Absolutely. Just a couple news outside of the series going on right now, and the Stanley Cup final obviously set in stone, but the Washington Capitals announced today that they have hired Spencer Carberry, an assistant coach, former assistant for Sheldon Keefe in Toronto, to a four-year deal. I'm going to be completely honest. I don't know. I didn't know much about Spencer Carberry. I didn't really know he was in the running to be a head coach in the NHL. And, you know, congratulations to him. Obviously, we know the Capitals moved on from Peter Laviolette, who will be, all rumors directed, heading to New York. But do you know much about Spencer, Justin?
I read the article on the hire, and some interesting points here, I guess, to note. Head of the Leafs power play, which was second best in his 2 years there. So that's obviously a really good perk for Capitals, whether you have Ovechkin still and finding success with him or when the next step comes. If this is, they signed him for 4 years. So there's a really good chance he's the first coach to coach Washington without Ovechkin since Ovechkin was drafted.
Yep.
So that's obviously something you're going to want to have as a guy who's successful in the power play coaching. Also, he was the head coach of the Hershey Bears, the AHL team before the Leafs, which is the affiliate to the Capitals. So this is also a guy, just like Bednar in Avalanche, who has worked with and seen a lot of the prospects in this Capitals organization. And that could pay massive dividends. Again, in this post-Ovechkin era, it might not be as big of a drop-off or a full rebuild if you have the pieces in place where, hey, when Ovechkin's getting ushered out, we have a coach right now who's already worked with these guys, and we could kind of like, they could maybe exceed expectations in a way if they're in an environment of success. So he played in the East Coast Hockey League, was the highest he played. He coached there as assistant, and long career in coaching, working his way up, which I think is a perk. And again, the biggest thing for me, it's a new head coach. It's not Gerard Gallant again. It's not the rehires we've seen. Like, again, Gallant's a good coach, nothing against that. It was more saying, it's not the carousel that we just see these same guys that are on their 12th team now. I kind of like this hire being a new face.
No, absolutely. I like it. It's going to be exciting to see, you know, if the Capitals can kind of retool and get back in the mix. But obviously, too, the Nashville Predators have hired Andrew Burnett. It was a matter of time before this guy got a bench boss role. Obviously, we know he won the President's Trophy with the Florida Panthers, spent this season alongside Lindy Ruff with the New Jersey Devils. And finally, he's going to get another opportunity, it sounds like, for a little longer term behind the bench for the Nashville Predators. I really like this hire, man. I think he probably helped out a lot of the New Jersey Devils success this year, and that's something I'm circling, and I'm going to loop back here and remind us come fall, is if this New Jersey Devils team slows down a little bit or doesn't, you know, perform like they did this year, it's like, well, how much do we put on Burnett, you know?
Yeah, and you know what, honestly, I was gonna kind of go a different way, but I think you kind of swayed me. But I was gonna say I'm a little indifferent because excuse me, he took over a team that was, for the most part, in my eyes, it was Quenville's team and systems and coaching, etc. So I was a little bit indifferent. Obviously, they didn't have success in the playoffs, but You know what? I mean, yeah. I mean, the assistant coach role, I think, it was underrated. I mean, obviously, he had a major impact on the Florida Panthers that year, regardless of head coach or assistant.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was there. And like you said, the development of the New Jersey Devils. Yeah. You know what? You're right. I'm very interested and intrigued. Barry Trotz in Nashville, and now Burnett gets his own team finally. You know what I mean? Because even as an interim and take the team the whole way, didn't feel like his own team. So I'm very interested to see what Nashville Predators are doing moving forward. Because you know what? You're right. I think sneaky good steps moving forward for this Predators organization.
Definitely at the management level. They definitely have some key pieces. I mean, we know how good Saros is. He's kind of in that top five goaltending in the league, and with, you know, one of the top three defensemen in the league. It's just kind of a matter of, it's been a bit of a shit show, to be completely honest, up front for them with injuries and just, you know, kind of bad contracts. So we'll see what happens with the Nashville Predators moving on. But let's refocus, regather, and get things back on track in the Stanley Cup Finals. Obviously, we know last episode we talked about the Florida Panthers moving on in a sweeping fashion over the Carolina Hurricanes, and we still had a series to conclude. We had the Vegas Golden Knights, Dallas Stars. And Dallas, they got right back into this thing. They won two games without their captain, Jamie Benn, who was suspended. But Game 6 rolls around in Dallas. I expected a much better effort of the Dallas Stars. The Vegas Golden Knights, they completely dismantled them 6-0, man. And it was right off the get-go, too. A blink of an eye, they're up 1-0. And we'll talk about Bruce Cassidy's quotes, actually, before Game 6. Talking about, it was the most ricochet shot off the Arizona Coyotes I've ever heard in my entire life. He's like, 24 giveaways. You're not going to win against the Arizona Coyotes in January with 24 giveaways. Just taking ricochet shots from Bruce Cassidy. But Vegas is moving on, and we now have our Stanley Cup set. Florida-Vegas.
Yeah. I mean, so unfortunate, obviously, to come out and end your season at 6-0 loss. But I'm not going to focus as much on Dallas as Vegas came out and put the nail in the coffin.
Oh, yeah.
On the road and said, hey, we don't want to play another game. I just want to bring up two guys real quick before we move on, because obviously we're going to get into finals preview. But first one's Joe Pavelski. What a career.
Yes.
Would have loved to see him win the cup. He's got over 1,000 points in his career. Phenomenal leader. I saw a video from when he was on San Jose giving a speech. They said he must be giving one of these to the Dallas Stars as they won two straight games. And like, just a guy who's came so close so many times. And you just wish he could have got a Stanley Cup, obviously, here again, but with the Dallas Stars. And then the other one's Roope Hintz. What a playoffs from him. Maybe one of the quietest playoff performances we've seen, obviously being in Dallas. But 10 goals, second most, 14 assists, the most, 24 points, the most in the playoffs. He absolutely showed up and showed out. And honestly, made me more convinced that this Dallas Stars team is primed to be better in the future than the vibe around the Dallas Stars thing in the media and the fan bases. Jamie Benn, old Sagan, old Suter, old man, Roope Hintz, Robertson, Wyatt Johnson, yep. Ottinger, Heiskanen, man, this might be like the beginning peak of the, like, people are worried about the LA Kings having Kopitar, Doughty, but really being young outside of that. I think this Dallas Stars team might be a wagon in the next 5 years. I don't know about Cup, because obviously there's a lot more pieces that need to be made, but they are primed to be a playoff team for a while here in my eyes.
Let's not forget about this guy who absolutely lit it up at the World Juniors. He's playing right now in the Memorial Cup. Logan Stankoven is a Dallas Star as well. I mean, he played with Bedard a lot of the tournament at the World Juniors. He was an incredible player, a little undersized, but he's got some jump in his game. So, they're in good shape. I mean, I think Tyler Seguin's got 4 more years at 9.5, which is going to be interesting to see. Yeah. And then Jamie Benn's got an iffy contract as well. But they're in good shape in terms of their prospects. They've drafted really well. Yeah. And I know people were kind of jumping on the back of Mason Marchment, saying that was a terrible signing. I liked his game at some points during the playoffs. Yeah. Let's talk about it. We have the most, I'm not sure anybody would have predicted this, but we've got the Florida Panthers taking on the Vegas Golden Knights. And two coaches that have, I mean, Paul Maurice has been around the block, man. He got hired in Carolina when he was 29 years old. Like, he's been coaching for so long. And you got Bruce Cassidy, who's kind of new on the scene, but, you know, obviously had some success with the Bruins, lost in the 2019 final. Was Maurice
the head coach of that Carolina Cup team?
I don't think. I think he was just
I think you're right. But yeah, either way, the experience you're saying is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And you know what? It was an interesting vibe for Paul Maurice after the season ended when he parted ways with Winnipeg, because there's that Winnipeg always kind of was great in the regular season and always fell short or failed to a degree. And there's that dry kind of feeling around the Jets and what they could do. And then he stepped away, and it wasn't a firing, but it was a step away kind of weird thing going on. Then he signed in Florida, and that was pretty quiet because they weren't a wagon all year and all that. And now all of a sudden he's got these guys peaking at the right time. And again, just showing his experience in the sense of, like, you don't have to be good in middle of October, November. You got to be peaking at the right time. I'm not going to sit here and say that it was his plan to get into the playoffs this way.
No.
But nonetheless, he's proven that he's one of the top coaches in the league right now.
And that kind of the TSN turning point there. Remember, they're playing the Leafs late in the season, and Matthew Tkachuk's father, Keith, went onto the radio and he said, you know, the Panthers are soft and they don't play like his brother Brady and things of that nature. And then they challenged the goal, and Maurice lost it at the team. He blew a fuse and a half, and really they haven't looked back. They've played much better. They've played a much better game, and I'm sure they took that to heart. But I mean, who do you like in this series? I mean, obviously the goaltending duo favors the Florida Panthers. The one thing that's looming over this series for me, I think Decor, Yulin, Vegas, and then forward groups, I mean, I think they both have great great assets up front, but I would lean Vegas as well in regards to depth. But Florida's been they're going to be almost off 2 weeks when they drop the puck on Saturday. What does that do for a guy like Bobrovsky's vibes? What does that do like for that team that hasn't been going to war for a few weeks? I'm leaning Vegas. I'm going to be completely honest with you, Justin. I'm leaning Vegas in this series, but I want to hear your thoughts, your initial thoughts on this series.
So first thing first, with the rest, in my experience and how I feel, is rest for goaltending is absolutely massive, especially for a guy like Bobrovsky, who's played a ton of time. I'm not sure if you saw the thing posted there on Twitter or whatever it was. He lost 25 pounds in that 4 overtime game, and he loses 15 pounds every game, which is actually
pretty outrageous.
It's common for a lot of hockey players to lose 10 to 15 pounds because it's basically of sweat and sugar and all that. Yeah. But 25 pounds is absolutely, like, that's so much more on your body than you could even imagine. So I think the rest for him is massive. My question is the rest for the rest of the team is obviously good, but mentally, this is a team that's been on a roll and a streak since before playoffs. That's kind of what they've been riding. Now we're really going to see, is this team this good, and are they this legit, or has it been a streak and a run? Basically, is how quick can they answer in game one and two? Because if Vegas comes in here and steamrolls them in game one, you're kind of losing that mental confidence and headspace that the Panthers been rolling with. Do you agree?
I agree, man. And I think about too, like, think about like living in Florida and having all that time off. I mean, beach, golf, I mean, you name it, really, you know, driving around in nice cars. I mean, I just don't know. I hope they took it serious. I mean, obviously they took it seriously, but I do think that break might be a disadvantage, you know, and Vegas, man, they're a dangerous team. They've been here before. This is their second final, in 6 years? And the Panthers haven't been here since 96. Not that, you know, any of that matters, but it's going to be interesting. I'm going to come out and say this. I like the Vegas Golden Knights in six in this one. I'm taking Vegas in six.
Okay, Vegas in six. Man, this is tough. I'm going to go with the Panthers. And I'm going with them in seven. I think it goes seven. I know it's not common for cup finals to go seven. I really see this one going seven. My X factor for Vegas lies in Pietrangelo, Theodore, and Martinez. It's three guys, but the point of it is that's the leader of the decor for Vegas. They need to be as elite as they have been in front of Hill the rest of the way for the Panthers. versus the Panthers. They cannot leave Hill out to dry. Even if it's Thompson, I know he's been skating, whatever it is. This goaltending is the mismatch. But they've negated it by being absolutely phenomenal at negating graded chances and a high volume of high-end chances. If they can't contain this Panthers team, and if they can't penalty kill well against this Panthers team, who their power play has been hot, this is going to be a quick series, just like we've seen the Panthers do. So for me, it's on the defense of Vegas. I think the defense for Vegas, if they give the Panthers what they want, and that's going to be they're going to dump it in, trap you to a degree, and then go on transition. If they get odd man chances on transition, or they burn you and you take a penalty and different things like that, and PK, if they get those things right like they have been lately, this is going to be, for me, Panthers quicker than I think. I'm going Panthers in seven because, man, the Vegas D has been that impressive. I just don't see it falling off. It's about how well can they do it.
It's going to be exciting. I think regardless of, you know, how these teams played out in the regular season, well, we know how Vegas is the number one seed out in the West, but, you know, I think it's going to be exciting. There's a lot of compelling cases, a lot of compelling players on these both of these teams, and it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. Let's move into quarter two because we do have the NBA now set in stone, the championship that is, but let's first start off with Bob Myers, executive for the Golden State Warriors, stepping away. I mean, we know what he's done. He's really been a catalyst for this team, winning four rings, you know, designing this team, and you know, he's stepping away, which is surprising, but they had a tough year, man. And, yeah. You know, from what we saw, does it feel like it's the kind of the end of the dynasty for the Golden State Warriors? It feels that way. You know, how are you feeling about Bob Myers? I mean, obviously, you know, he's going to go down as one of the greats in recent history.
100%. I mean, it's kind of odd. I mean, I want to know a lot more about what this parting ways is to give a full analysis. I mean, I think it's the end of the dynasty. I mean, I think that was kind of already in the cards.
Yep.
I almost wonder if he doesn't want to GM a rebuild. Maybe that's a little bit of a case, and he's going to go to more of a team that is kind of saying to themselves, hey, we need a guy who's ready to take this team that was a low playoff seed to a contender. So maybe it's something like that. But either way, yeah, this guy's resume is absolutely stacked here in Golden State. Do you think there's any way that they move on from a Curry or Draymond at the end of their career, or is this going to be something where they just ride these guys till they retire out of respect and what have you, and we're just going to see the slow demise, I guess, of Golden State? Not even demise, but the slow decline.
For some reason, I feel like Draymond Green would be the guy out of the three of them just to kind of go to another team. He causes a lot of ruckus outside and inside the locker room, punching Jordan Poole in the face earlier. And they talked about how they verbalized that, you know, how that took away from some of the chemistry in the team through the late run. But I feel as if Clay and Steph are pretty, if they don't want to move, they can be Warriors for life. I it's interesting though. I mean, I think like you would try to want to surround these guys with another shot at it, right? I mean, it's not like, you know, if you can kind of get a nice big in there and another guy who can complement those two, I think, you know, you might be like Jordan Poole's a really nice player. He might be out on a deal, you know, this summer, but yeah, we'll see, man. I'm not sure.
How many more goes do you think they get? How many, like, say next year they kind of go all in, kind of like they've been doing lately. Like, they have good pieces. They make playoffs. Like, Draymond's over 30 now. And say next year they lose in the conference final in game six. Say they make it a conference final. They show again that they're a great unit, great core. The next year after that now. Like, how many times do you think they get to go at the management saying, we're going to put the pieces to go all in here?
What do you think? Like, I think realistically, like two or three more, maybe four, two or three.
I can see two. I mean, at what point does going all in severely jeopardize your future when the cards are in front of you that this isn't going to win the NBA title anymore?
Yeah. And that's, I think, you know what I mean? Like, they got a taste of it this year, too. They got a taste of it.
Yeah.
You know, losing to that Lakers team who really weren't that strong in six games and not being able to win on the road all season long. I think you kind of, the writing's on the wall there that we got to change a little bit up here, if not go full on scorched earth and just send everyone around. But Nick Nurse, hired in Philadelphia. This is a really interesting signing. I mean, obviously Doc Rivers, longtime coach there, and you know, from what I understand, like a renowned coach. I mean, he hasn't really, you know, been able to get it done outside of the Celtics in 2008, but well-respected coach. And now they bring in a guy like Nick Nurse, who won a championship in 2019 with the Toronto Raptors, and seems like he knows what he's doing. So it's going to be interesting to see, because they, I mean, look at that team. And we thought that this could be the year, you did certainly, that this team could go deeper than they did. And with Joel Embiid coming back, James Harden, Tyrese Maxey, Tobias Harris, I mean, it could be scary again. And Nick Nurse might be a nice voice for this team.
Yeah, I mean, I think Nick Nurse has proven, obviously, I mean, how much credit you want to give him, that team was absolutely loaded in Toronto, but that he could lead a superstar group of players or high-end players to bring it together to win a championship. I'm a Raptors fan, and I hate to say this as well, but a lot of injuries went our way in that playoff run. Joel Embiid was sick and had an injury, and we beat him in seven. Giannis was full out hurt and then played a little bit through it, but he was full out injured in that series. And then KD tears his ACL. Like, again, I'm not taking anything away. I'm a Raptors fan. That's a ring that it is 100%. I'm just saying, like, I worry for the 76ers that this is a hire that's a good hire, but it's not as much of the coaching as it's the player situation. Because I really thought that this roster was in a spot to win. And the big reason why was Harden's been in these playoffs for so long, and Embiid's got a number of playoffs as well. How much of the coach do they need to get through this? Like, I don't know. Maybe the adjustments and stuff are something I'm undermining, but I just, like, what does Embiid need to be told and Harden to them for them to win a game seven?
Yeah, I don't know. And it's a good question. It's I mean, you know, if you get there, it comes down to the guys being a dog, you know, who wants it more. And it's kind of, you know, it leads into the Celtics series. You know, what the heck happened last night in game seven? Obviously, we've got the Denver Nuggets waiting on the winner of the Miami Heat and the Boston Celtics. Boston Celtics going to game seven. Can't get it done at home. All the stars are out. You got Paul Pierce in the building, Ray Allen, all the boys, Jack Harlow's in the building. Man, I could not believe it, man. It felt like they were jacking shots, just low percentage shots for a lot of the first half, man. And they fell behind. And, I mean, you got to give it to Jimmy Butler. He guaranteed it. They did win. They got a big road win. And it wasn't really that scary of a win. Like, they pretty much had a stranglehold over that game from the end of the first quarter on.
I mean, how do you... So, you're a Celtics fan.
Yeah.
For sure, right? So, I got to ask right at the top here, like, when you watched that game seven, was there any point of view where, was there any moment where you're like, this thing's over? Because even myself as a non-Celtics fan, down 10 going into the fourth, I didn't feel like, I thought that the Celtics were primed for a run possibly. I kind of felt like they're kind of situated in a spot they've been so many times and have pulled out the win.
Yeah, down 15. I mean, down 10, you know, going into the fourth, right? Down 15 going into the half. I mean, you don't feel like it's over, but you got to feel like they've got to elevate now, right? You've got to outscore this team by 10 to at least tie, to extend this game to overtime in the quarter. And I didn't feel the momentum really swinging at all, you know? I just didn't see enough from the big guns. And it's unfortunate, man. It really is. I was a little bummed out, but you got to give credit to the Heat, man. Caleb Martin.
Wow.
What a beast, man. Incredible performance. And it wasn't the Jimmy Butler show. Obviously, Jimmy played incredible, but it was the supporting cast. Max Strus played unbelievable, and then Caleb Martin. And it just, I mean, it goes down from there. I mean, they came to play, and they earned it, man. They won that game. And you know, the Celtics are in trouble moving forward, and the Heat booked their ticket to play Denver, which I'm going to just come out and say this. I don't think it's going to be a long series.
Yeah. Just quickly with the... To close out that one. Yeah, I mean, even you could look back at game six for the Celtics, man. I'm not really sure that they should have won that game. Duncan Robinson had two wide open threes to make that a 7-point game instead of the 1-point game it was. Yep. Also, we have to mention it. Jason Tatum rolled that ankle super early.
Yep.
That's a massive factor. Like, he was not himself, and he is that team, especially in a game seven.
100%.
So honestly, this leads into my next question and where you were going. You just came back from down 0-3 to go in the conference finals. Let's be honest. You're down 10 going into the fourth with Tatum basically on one leg. Like, he was not even close to himself. you're saying as a Celtics fan, this team's in a tough spot. Like, I want to know your opinion first. Like, you got Jaylen Brown, I think's up for a contract, and they're talking about a Supermax, whatever it is. So it's big money, big commitment. And obviously Tatum's debated. I think he's the number one guy for sure there, but obviously that's whatever situation. You got Marcus Smart, those three have been the conversation through this playoffs. They're the three-headed monster. Where's your head up for the Celtics moving forward here?
It might be a hot take, man, but to pay Jaylen Brown the money that he's going to be eligible for, I think it's close to $300 million over. It's insane because he was an All-NBA guy or a second-team All-NBA. So, I would like a serviceable star point guard. And I know that that's hard to request, but a real guy who can handle the ball, distribute the ball, because that's what it seemed like they wanted to do, was everyone was just kind of parked outside and they needed a guy to distribute, find the open guy. And I mean, I know Marcus Smart, is okay, did okay, but I don't think he's a true point guard. Jaylen Brown, to me, everyone's saying that he can go be a star on another team, he can go be the number one, then I would let him go be the number one and allocate those funds elsewhere and see what you can bring in for Jaylen Brown. I love Jaylen Brown, don't get me wrong, but I don't think that he is the end-all be-all. Like, I don't think that he's a guy that you're going to have to break the bank on and really you know, be upset. So, that being said, you have to replace that with at least a serviceable player that could score and be a big contributor when Jason Tatum's having slow nights, which happens. But
so I'm pulling it up here. I want to see, because I want to dive into this. There's a lot of Boston fans who want to know. So
okay,
I want to know. So what I'm kind of feeling is your emphasis is on point guard. You feel like possibly you have to move Jaylen Brown to do that. I have a question for you. You say serviceable point guard.
Yeah.
If you moved on from Marcus Smart, you paid Jaylen Brown, and you kept Tatum, obviously. Are we both in agreement? You keep Tatum, first of all?
Oh, yeah. 100%. Yeah. Yes.
So Jaylen Brown is 26, and he's an all-NBA player. I think Boston fans are obviously in a very reactive mood right now, so that's fair. I get it. But you have an all-NBA player who's been to the finals and conference finals, who's 26 years old. That is a massive asset that anybody would normally want. If they went out and got a guy like Dennis Schroeder, say, on a lower deal, he's not looking for a max or anything like that, and you moved on from Smart, do you feel like the team's better or worse?
Worse. Way worse.
What about a guy like D'Angelo Russell? Because now there's another guy who went to the conference finals.
Worse. No, Marcus Smart is a hound.
I agree. What about Fred VanVleet?
Yeah, That's a good question. Now you start to kind of think, okay, what's this puzzle start to look like? I want to keep Marcus Smart.
So now, and you know why that's fair? And I know everyone's reactive right now. We're not the only ones. You're not the only one. Your team finished top two in the East back-to-back years, and your core is under 27 years old.
Yeah.
I know they haven't won, but what I'm saying to you is,
they're getting there.
The expectation in Boston is so high for all their sports, which is so fair. They won forever.
Yeah.
And yes, you went to the finals last year. So yeah, you didn't win the finals this year. I get that. You didn't get there. So it's a step down. I understand the situation. But you have...
You're knocking on the door.
And you know what? I listened to an interview by Mike Malone today. He was talking about... And you know what he said? They lost in the last three playoffs. They went to the conference finals twice, I think. And they said... Every single year, he could see that you win by losing. So he was saying how their losses each year had made them that much better year and year and year.
Yeah.
But if you blow this thing up and get rid of what's worked so well when they're young, I don't know what you could really add to get better than this team. I can understand maybe a Horford, something like that. You get a more modern, maybe more mobile guy, kind of something like different on those pieces.
Yeah.
I just don't see how you move those three and get better.
Yeah. No, I can appreciate that. And I think that it's just kind of the panic of being a sports fan and thinking like, oh my gosh, it's back-to-back years. They can't get it done. This isn't good enough to get it done. And you're right. I mean, every team in the NBA is looking around going, we would love to have any of those guys. We would trade our seasons for those seasons.
Yeah.
It's a great point, but let's move into the finals here because it's the Miami Heat. They're taking on the Denver Nuggets. I think this is going to be a really quick series. I think it's the Denver Nuggets and obviously the long layoff, but it feels like it's their year. And I know that we've just watched a bit of a gong show in the Eastern Conference. We've seen this beautiful run by the Miami Heat, but man, I don't think they've dealt with the Nuggets team yet. And this Nuggets team is, they're poised. They're hungry. They've got the best player in the NBA. And you've talked about it all year, Justin. I don't know if you're going to change it up, but do you see the Nuggets winning this series?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I've been on the Nuggets the whole way.
Yeah.
I absolutely got a little bit excited about the narrative of LeBron and the Lakers for 2 days.
Yep.
But realistically and honestly, yeah, we talked about it my first episode here 3 months ago, 2 months ago, whatever it was. Like,
yep.
This team being in the West was severely overlooked.
Yep.
Nikolai Jokic winning MVP the last 2 years made him overlooked this year because of the fatigue, which is fair. I get it. Jamal Murray tearing his ACL in previous years made him overlooked. Aaron Gordon going to a team like, honestly, just the Nuggets being the Nuggets made them very, very underrated when, like I said, from Christmas, they were showing every single sign of being by far the best team in the West. And then you're getting a chance to play in the NBA Finals, which this is something to remember for fans moving forward. If you want to take a look at picks or predictions or whatever, take a look at teams' paths to get to the championship or the final, because you never know who or what is going to come in the finals. And look at this right now. All I said was, look at the Nuggets' path through the West. I like it. I like it way better. They've shown that they can be the number one team in the West, which means they've beaten all these teams throughout the regular season. And it's so much easier than going through the East. And now they're gifted. And I will get into the predictions, but they're gifted an eighth seed team.
Yeah.
And I know this team's completely overachieving. But for the most part, they are now the complete utter favorites. And everyone else was picking Celtics, Giannis and the Bucks and all this, whatever. I'm going to take Nuggets in, I'm going to say, 5 games.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I think it's going to be a quick series as well. I'll take the Nuggets in 6, but yeah, I think we're both in agreement that the Nuggets, they feel like the better team. They've been the better team all season long. It's not a Cinderella run in regard to they wouldn't question anything if they went down a game. They know what they're all about. They've got a lot of great depth. They've got a lot of great pieces, and I just can't get past that they have the best player in the NBA. Like, it's not a guy that's going to be inconsistent like Jimmy Butler. It's this guy's coming every night, probably with a triple-double, 30-point triple-double, and you've got to handle him. And then you've got to handle him when he starts just distributing. And if you got Jamal Murray piling on 30, 35, that's tough to handle, no matter who you are.
It's 32 points per game, Jamal Murray in the conference finals. That is any other year's conference final player of the year.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, because Nikola Jokic is 30-point triple-double. You're right. I mean, Aaron Gordon's defense is underrated. He's probably going to defend Jimmy Butler. Like, people aren't going to realize that and understand that he's that good defensively. And Michael Porter Jr. was drafted, don't quote me on this, 12th, 15th, somewhere in there. He had back issues going into that draft. He would have been a top 10 pick.
Yeah.
Like,
he's a stud.
Basically, the other thing that's selling it for me, Nuggets, if Nuggets are going to win an NBA championship, and it's not this year, it's not happening for me. That's the way I also view this series.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. This is their time. This is the time to ring up. Go get it.
Yep.
All right, we're excited about it. Obviously, we'll break down those series in the NHL and NBA as they come at us, but let's move into the halftime show, Justin, because we have who makes more money. And I've got 3 for you, Justin. Go. I'm going to whip them right at you.
Let's do it.
Who makes more money, Alphonso Davies or Connor McDavid?
Alphonso Davies or Connor McDavid. So you got that. Oh, so I'm a big Alphonso Davies fan as Canadian. Connor makes, as we know, 12. I'm going to go with Alphonso Davies because I know he's worth a ton, but is he getting paid?
He's only getting paid around 10 million pounds, which equals 12 million. That 12.5 by Connor McDavid is more. Connor McDavid makes more than Alphonso Davies.
Hey, well, Alphonso Davies is due for a big pay, so it's coming soon.
For sure.
Wow.
Who makes more money, Nikola Jokic or Kristaps Porzingis?
Nikola Jokic or Porzingis? Jokic.
Porzingis makes more money than Nikola Jokic. Porzingis makes $33.8 million per season. Jokic makes $33 million.
Lock up the man who signed Porzingis to that contract. That is the most criminal thing I've ever heard in my life. And it looks so bad because of what's going on. I can't even. Oh, my God.
Who makes more money, Aaron Donald or Josh Allen?
Ooh. I mean, oh, wow, because Aaron Donald's got to be the most. I'm going to go with Allen because I. Did he sign? Did Allen get a new contract? I'm going to go with Donald. I'm going to go with Donald. I'm say the Rams have been willing to pay all their guys. I'm going to go with Aaron Donald.
Aaron Donald is correct. He makes $28.5 million compared to $28 million for Josh Allen.
Wow. So Allen did get the new contract and Donald's still way up there. Oh, wow. What's the better contract there? Okay, I mean, okay, so.
Oh, I would think it's Josh Allen making 28.
Allen now, yeah, I guess Donald's a lot older, but all right, I got three for you. Here we go.
Yep.
Who gets paid more, Manny Machado or Davante Adams?
Machado.
Davante Adams gets $28 million. Machado's at $31.8 million. Manny Machado. Who gets paid more, Trent Williams or Draymond Green? Trent Williams, San Francisco left tackle, maybe the best in the league. Just for
I'm gonna go listen. Trent Williams.
Trent Williams is at 23. Draymond Green's at 24.9.
No!
Just get some. All right, last one. Who makes more, Aaron Gordon or Von Miller?
Aaron Gordon or Von Miller? Von signed the big deal in Buffalo. What was he making per year? I'm going to go Aaron Gordon.
Aaron Gordon's at 21.66. Vaughn's at 20. So Aaron does just
let's go.
Beat him.
Okay.
There you go.
Yeah, that's those are good ones. I like that. We're getting the hang. How absurd is it that Porzingis makes more than Jokic?
I mean, that's the NBA's got a contract problem itself because you got that like. The Washington Wizards are paying this guy. Like they feel it's worth it. Like, I know they didn't sign him to this, but like they feel like it is best for their franchise to pay this guy that much money. That's insane to me.
It's like, absolutely outrageous.
What's the scenario where that's the right move? I can't understand it.
Well,
move on from him.
Let's move into the MLB baseball world where things are kind of starting to sort themselves out in the American League East, and it is not favorable for the Jays. The Yankees are looking solid. I mean, they're kind of right back in the mix. They're only two games back of the Rays. They're only two games back of the Orioles, only six games back of the Rays, who we know are just, they're 39-17. To be six games back of that is no, you know, you're having a great season as well. They're 7-3, and Aaron Judge just having himself a night versus the Mariners in a 10-4 win. Home run, robbery, catch. A three at bat, a two home run game. Like, it just an absolute. He's heating up, and after that slow start that he had, Justin, he's absolutely heating up. How are you feeling about this Yankees team as they're climbing back into this race?
Well, it's kind of wild because they're 32-23 now, and after 30 games, they're below 500. And we both said though, like, we weren't worried about. Really, we obviously knew the talent level on them, so we weren't too worried about this being a big problem.
Yeah,
but we did say, Greg, that this division's done in terms of division winner. We said that the Rays have done and locked up.
That's not the case.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, do we see a scenario one where Yankees pass them, and two, can we see a scenario where Yankees pass them before the 100 game mark? Because we're at 55, 56 right now. Like, I could absolutely see a world where Rays come down a little bit. Obviously, that's not crazy. Like, even if they go 500 through the next 20 games, like, that's obviously disappointing for them in a sense, but that's not a crazy thing over 162 games. So, say they go 500. All the Yankees have to do in the next 20 games is go, what's the math? Like, say they go 15-5. Like, the Yankees could absolutely go 15-5 here.
100%.
And they'd be up on them easily.
Yeah. Well, I think they're certainly going to catch Baltimore. But now it's just a matter if they can catch the Rays. But I think we crowned the Rays way too early.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they are still just on such a tear. I mean, they've been just incredible. But, I mean, like, let's look at the Jays. Like, how close are we to writing off this Jays season? I mean, I know they're only 10 games back. But
the wild card, right? That's the thing.
The wild card race is going to be a shit show. I mean,
yeah.
Right now,
well said.
Yeah, it's going to be a shit show. Right now, we've got the Orioles, Yankees, Astros, Red Sox, Angels, and Mariners all ahead of the Blue Jays in the wild card race. I know they're only 3.5 games out, but it's just they got to get things turned around quickly, and they need more consistency.
Yeah, as we look at this, Greg, just to chime in, look at the teams not even more behind. Look who's in the wild card right now. The Houston Astros.
Yeah.
Like the perennial best team in the league, and the New York Yankees, perennial best team in the league. Like, other than the to me, when I look at this wild card race, Orioles are the one wild card, Yankees two, three Astros. You got Red Sox, Angels, Mariners, like you mentioned. It's everyone chasing the Orioles. And I know people might not agree with that as Orioles fans, whatever you might be, if there are any, but I think everyone's chasing the Orioles. I think Yankees and Astros absolutely will find their step. If Yankees pass the Rays, it'll be Rays come down to there. If Astros catch the Rangers will be sitting there because they're all four of them are elite teams. This is a race to the Orioles, whether or not the Orioles can hang on. And that leads us to our next point here. They just lost their all-star Cedric Mullins.
This guy's definitely
with an injury.
One of their best players.
The reason we bring it up is because we don't know that this team is as deep as other teams in the MLB. Like, if this guy's out, which they don't know how long he's going to be out, this thing could be nagging, running the bases in the outfields, things like that. This could be a little bit of a lengthy one. Can they afford to lose guys like this on a roster that, I mean, I don't know many more names on this team to replace guys to keep them from the teams we just listed chasing them down.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, the Cedric Mullins kid, freak, obviously was on the United States team when they lost to Japan at the World Baseball Classic. Center fielder, so like you said, I mean, you know, the rehab's going to be extensive because you need this guy covering lots of turf, making grabs, and obviously what he brings to the lineup is tough to replace. So how much of a hole will Cedric, his absence put on the Orioles? Probably a big one. So yeah, over the next few weeks, that's going to be worth monitoring for sure to see how the Orioles perform without Cedric Mullins. I mean, it's all about the AL East right now for me. It really is we're starting to kind of transition into baseball. But I mean, we look at we talk about it every episode. I mean, Bo Bichette is having such an amazing year. Chapman's having an incredible year. What the heck is Vladdy doing? Is Vladdy going to wake up and start providing here? Because I think once Vladdy wakes up and once they start getting a little consistency, this Jays team is going to start to get the engine moving. But we've been saying that now for a few weeks now.
Well, let's touch on it quick. So the Jays are still a winning record.
Yep.
As bad as things have been, they're still 3.5 games out of wild card. I would safely say we're at 60 games here, and Bo Bichette and Chapman haven't slowed down. So I'm saying this is they're having a year. Like, I'm not saying this is a hot start. It's not anymore. I think they're having a year.
Yep.
So my point here is if Bichette and Chapman are having a year and that is going to go the distance for them, like Vladdy gets the game turned around. We see Kiermaier maybe get the bat going. We see the pitching figure it out. Maybe Manoah they give Manoah a three-week break to kind of maybe get his head right, maybe some conditioning stuff within the organization. And he comes back, not even have to be a Cy Young guy, but able to string together six solid innings for this team. Like, I hate to say it, but like, it's hard to say that this season has gone wayward from them. And it's got to be soon, though. It's got to be soon.
Yeah. I just think that, like, if it's not soon, that these teams are going to continue to play well and continue to build the gap. So they've got to wake up. They've got to get things going. And you know what? When I'm there next Thursday, I plan to put on a loud show in the stands and get these guys going.
Let them know.
Let them know. But, no, it just quickly before we move into quarter four, which is a bit of a miscellaneous quarter here, Justin. Vegas, it sounds like that stadium that we've been talking about on the strip. Yeah. On the strip. Can you imagine just buckled with a beer walking on the strip because you can walk outside with alcohol in the Vegas and you just a ball comes flying out of the park? Like, it's just going to be unreal, man.
This is maybe this immediately vaults to the number one most electric baseball stadium in the league. I mean, I think it's got to be.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
And you want to talk about rowdy fans. Like, this is going to be a show in terms of the fans who are going to be going there. And I assume it's going to be a lot of bachelor parties.
Yep.
A lot of guys' trips. And they are going to be just like Greg at any sporting event he goes to, and they're going to be loud and rowdy, which is awesome for baseball, awesome for Vegas. Here's the question: if they relocate the A's, what percent chance are we putting on a new name? It's not going to be Las Vegas Athletics, right?
No, that's one of the 100% worst names in sports.
I agree.
The Athletics. Yeah, what?
Well, the Raiders kept it. That's the only reason.
True, very true. The Raiders is just more iconic. I feel as if that fan base is just, they're like molded into the Raiders, and
it also just
it's
like
a sick, sounds, it's a sick team.
The Las Vegas Raiders sounds like that's been a thing for like 100 years. It sounds like. I mean, they gotta change something.
So, what's a name? Like what's a name that you like?
I'm thinking Las Vegas Aces. I mean, Aces is the whole old-fashioned pitch, like the pitcher, like the ace pitcher, and then also the table, like the aces.
Oh. You know
what
I mean?
That's what I'm thinking.
Okay.
Okay. What do you think? Anything comes to
mind? I don't mind that. No, I don't mind that at all. I mean, I kind of like the Aces, the Las Vegas Aces. You know, the Las Vegas Vipers.
That's not bad either. Go some
the Vipers.
Animal route.
Yeah, because they're
Vipers
in the desert.
Vipers is a mean. That's mean.
The Vipers.
Too.
Yeah, I like the Vipers.
That could be good. That's a good. Hey, I hope they do something like that. Don't do something too mild.
No, exactly.
Honestly, Golden Knights, they were talking about a lot of like casino spinoff names for the NHL team. Then the NHL team kind of ruled against it. They're like, we don't really want that connection to a degree.
Yeah.
I think they nailed it with the Golden Knights.
Oh, yeah.
That's a sick name now.
Yeah. So, yeah. I don't know why they had to throw in the Golden.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah.
The Las Vegas Knights.
Not too bad either.
Yeah.
Some people were saying it was going to be the Black Knights or the Black Aces. So Black Aces is a term.
That's like the healthy scratches, right?
Yeah. So they thought they were going to go with that, but they went completely different. Golden Knights. But again, it's working out. Yeah, I didn't even think of that, but why the Golden? That's a very good point.
Yeah.
But,
anyway.
Hey,
let's move into quarter four here. Just briefly, we've got some golf to talk about. Obviously, the Charles Schwab Challenge is in the past. Emiliano Grillo, the Argentinian, just a veteran on tour. He won and he bogeyed the last too. It was kind of sketchy. Drove it into the water, and it was like, dude, what are you doing, man?
5 minutes.
I know, just went down the street.
5 minutes. Unbelievable.
But I mean, like, you've got a 2-shot lead going on 18. Isn't it like, here's the 3-iron or here's the 3-wood and get this thing in play? Now let's banana driver into the water.
Well, who did we see? We saw Matthew Fitzpatrick at the U.S. Open last year. Wasn't that the debate? He went driver all tourney, but they're like, he's got to lay up, went bunker, worked out for him, worked out for Grillo.
That bunker shot that he hit was insane. But yeah, you're right. Yeah.
But yeah, Grillo. So again, I don't know if everyone saw it. So Grillo hit a driver that was like into this like sewer runoff kind of like, it wasn't a creek.
A stream almost.
Yeah.
It looked like, it looked like it was not natural. Like it looked like it was from a storm.
Yeah. And the ball ran for 5 minutes, and the ruling was he can't get a beneficial spot from it, like where it ends. But like, so I guess after like 3 minutes, they go, no matter where it stops, you're getting the ball back here. So anyways, double bogey.
Which is bullshit, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. If it's natural, like that's the other thing is, if it's like a pond, he's getting a drop. So why is it now if he could play it out of this thing that they had there?
Yeah.
Imagine he hits this thing in and it's like greenside where it stops. That would just be the most electric. Like what would you aim? You try to, if you're down 4 strokes, would you aim for that? To try to make it eagle?
Yes. Or if you like bounce it down the cart path or something, like you play it where it lies. Like what's the difference between taking a little stream going down the course? It's, anyway.
And then while we're on funny, but I don't know if what tournament it was this weekend. Maybe it was a female tour. A ball gets hit out of play, and a fan just picked it up. This lady was walking by. She hit a tree and fell right beside her, and she just picked this ball up and walked off with it. Again, it was a sidebar. We had a couple of interesting things happen, obviously, on the golf course. Oh. But, yeah, Grillo got done, but we saw a little bit of a blown lead there from the 25-year-old Englishman.
Yes, he was up there the whole tournament. Harry Hall with the old school hat rolling around. He looks like he's about 6'8". He had a little muzzy action on the go too, and yep, he absolutely threw it down the throat and choked on it. But that's all right, man. It's it's all right, man. I think that guy's gonna he's got a promising career. He's only 25, like you said. But Harry Hall leading toe to toe and then just absolutely crumbling. But it is worth mentioning he made the turn like halfway through the tournament. He was at -12. The winner ended up being -8. So you know, obviously Colonial was playing tough over the weekend.
I got to read you one more thing here before we move forward.
Yep,
Scotty Scheffler.
Oh, dude,
listen to this. Ready?
The chef
tied for third in this event.
Yep,
tied for second at PGA Championship.
Yep.
Tied for 5th at AT&T, tied for 11th at the RBC, tied for 10th at the Masters, won the Players, tied for 4th at the Arnold Palmer, tied for 12th at the Genesis, won the Phoenix Open, tied 11, tied 7, 2nd place, tied 9, tied 3, tied 45. He's come outside top 12 in one event this year. One event this year.
Yeah, it's pretty special. Pretty special.
Nuclear. What a year. This guy is unbelievable.
Oh, he's incredible. He's one of those guys. We talk about it every time. The Rahm, the Scheffler, the Rory. And yeah. I don't even know if we can consider Rory in that group anymore. It's pretty much Rahm and Scheffler.
Well, let's go into this quickly. Again, just touch on it. Scheffler's winning a major this year, no?
Yeah, he's got two more opportunities. I'm not sure. I mean, was he right there at the Open? I mean, the U.S. Open's obviously going to be very difficult. He should be there, but I expect Rahm to be there. I expect Cam Smith. I expect Koepka to be right there as well. He certainly should be in the mix. Sure, and you know, he's always a good bet.
I mean, you want to talk, like, you got people like picking hot golfers and guys with the hot stick. You can't get hotter than him right now.
True.
It's
incredible.
We'll see.
Yeah, this week, the Memorial Golf Tournament. It's Jack Nicklaus's tournament held at Muirfield Village. Yep. Obviously, a very celebrated tournament. John Rahm's won this back-to-back years. Patrick Cantlay's played very well here. It's an elevated event, so all of the big stars will be here at the PGA Tour this week. It's an exciting one. I'm looking at Cam Young. He's my one pick that I'll give out on the podcast. I'm looking at Cam Young. I mean, obviously, we haven't seen him play overly well this season, but he's due for his win. We know what he brings to the table in regard to driving and ball striking. He just needs everything to go right for a week, and I think he gets in the winner's circle. I like Cam Young at +3,300 this week. Who are you liking, Justin? Obviously, we'll give out 6 best bets on social media tomorrow, but just, you know, kind of briefly, if you're looking at the field, do you like a guy that's popping out to you?
Yeah, honestly, this is a tougher one to look at. I'm thinking Hovland, but I feel like he faded off of that major run he had. Sungjae Im hasn't been great, but I still think he's due for a big win. I don't know. I'm thinking maybe I might go older guy. I might go more experienced, which at these elevated events that aren't majors, I kind of like to go younger guy to kind of be an opportunity for them to break onto the scene.
Yeah.
That I've been knocking on the door. I think this might be an older guy. You know who I really... Hey, dude, I don't want to even say it, but I'm thinking Rory, man.
Okay.
Thinking Rory.
Yeah, yeah.
Elevated event. He's been great. And I think this, we're knocking on the door of the Canadian Open. And this is when he's played good. This time of year, he's played good in the past. And
looking for three in a row. Looking for three in a row next week at the Canadian Open.
But even just like coming off the majors and stuff, like he kind of has that pressure now off back to just playing golf. And
yep.
I think Rory has a good shot at it, but we'll see.
Yep. I like it. I like it a lot. And let's not be mistaken. He only lost that PGA Championship by 7. I mean,
that's what I'm playing. Yeah, great golf. He is
playing 100%. Really good. No, man, it's going to be compelling for sure. There's some other little notes in here, Justin, but I'm feeling pretty good about the episode.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, it's going to be a long roadie. We're going to be checking in every once in a while. Yep. We've got an episode coming later on in the weekend, early next week. So,
I want to close the listeners out with, I got to ask you one question, golf question, and we'll close it out on this.
Fire it up.
Who's going to win? I saw this today. Who's going to win the most majors by the time they all retire? Okay. Ready?
Yep.
Brooks Koepka, he's at 5.
Yep.
Rory is at 4.
Yep.
Spieth is at 3. Morikawa is at 2. JT's at 2. DJ's at 2. Rams at 2. Or Scheffler, who's at 1. The Masters.
Wow. You know what?
The elites.
Who's going to win the most? Give me John Rahm. Yep.
So he chases down Brooks and passes him. So that's 4 more for Rahm.
Yep. Give me John Rahm. I like John. I like this guy. I think he's got, when he gets it going, he's a hard guy to beat. And it's not like he's running into any injuries. He doesn't look like he really cares about that diet stuff in regard to, he's kind of a heavier set guy and I think he owns it. So
playing golf, I'm going to go. I'm agree with you with Rahm.
Yeah. Who do you like in that?
The only other one I'm going to go is Rory.
Yeah. Rory too. He was the guy I was looking
Rory
at.
I can see Rory getting 2 more and being at 6. And I think 6 could be the most of that group. I really can.
Yep.
Absolutely. What a career would 6 be? So that's no slouch, but
be insane. Listen, everybody, go check in on the social medias. Go follow along. 5-star the episode. We'll catch you guys later on in the week. Let's go.
Let's go.